fear was concealed in the thickets across the stream from the mouth of the cave. He watched the couple emerge into the early sunlight. He had been spying on Bakat during all the preceding days of his courtship. Despite his hatred for Bakat, Thea was intrigued by the ancient marriage ritual. He felt a lascivious thrill from watching the man and woman play out their appointed roles. He wanted to witness the final act of mating before he interceded and exacted his revenge from Bakat. "Eh, Bakat has plucked himself another pretty flower." The fact that she was the woman of his enemy made her all the more desirable to Thea. "But he will not enjoy her long." Thea hugged himself with glee and let the couple trot off into the forest. He would not follow too closely, for he knew that although Bakat was distracted by his new companion, he was still a formidable adversary. Thea was in no hurry. He was a hunter, and the first attribute of the hunter is patience. He knew there would be a time when Bakat and the girl were separated, if only for a short time. That would be his chance. A little before noon, Bakat came upon a small herd of buffalo. Thea watched as he left his bag and accoutrements in Letty's care and crept forward. He picked out a half-grown heifer whose flesh would be sweet and tender, not gamey and tough as that of an older beast. She was also much smaller in size, so that the poison would work more swiftly. Keeping downwind, Bakat manoeuvred skilfully into a position directly behind the heifer so that he could send an arrow into the thin skin surrounding her anus and genitals. The thicker hide of her body would resist the frail arrow. The network of veins around the heifer's body openings would convey the poison swiftly to her heart. His shot was true, and the animal galloped away in alarm with the rest of the herd, the shaft of the arrow broken off, but the barbed, poisoned head was buried deeply. She ran for only a short distance before the poison started to take effect, and she slowed to a walk. Bakat and Letty followed patiently. The sun had moved only a few fingers across the sky before the heifer halted and lay down. Bakat and his little woman squatted nearby. At last the beast groaned and rolled over onto her side. Bakat and Letty broke into a song of praise and thanks to the heifer for giving them her flesh to sustain them, and ran forward to butcher the carcass. That evening, while it was still light, they made their camp beside it. No matter that the flesh would soon turn in the heat, they would remain here until the entire cow was consumed, guarding it from the vultures and other scavengers. Letty made the fire and roasted strips of liver and the back straps of meat. When they had finished eating, Bakat led her to the sleeping mat, and they coupled. Thea crept closer to spy upon this final act of the courtship. In the end, when Bakat and Letty writhed together as one and cried out in a single voice, he doubled over and, in a shuddering spasm, ejaculated in concert with them. Then, before Bakat could recover, he slipped back into the bushes. "It has been done," Thea whispered to himself. "And now the time has come for Bakat to die. He is lulled and softened by love. There will never be a better time than this." In the dawn, Thea watched when Letty rose from the mat beside her husband and knelt before the ashes of the fire to blow life back into them. When the flames burned up brightly, she left the camp and came into the bushes close to where Thea waited. She looked about her carefully, then untied the string of her beaded apron, laid it aside, and squatted. While she was busy, Thea crept up on her. As she stood again, he sprang upon her from behind. Thea was swift and powerful. She had no chance to cry out before he had covered her mouth and nose with her own apron. He held her down easily while he gagged and trussed her with the bark rope he had plaited the previous evening. Then he lifted her on his shoulder and carried her away. He made no effort to cover his tracks. The girl was the bait. Bakat would follow her, and Thea would be ready for him. Thea had scouted the ground the previous evening, and he knew exactly where to take the girl. He had chosen an isolated koppie not far from the campsite. The sides were sheer and rocky, so that from the heights he could keep a watch over the approaches. He had discovered only one path to the top, and its entire length was exposed to an archer on the summit. The girl was small and light. Thea ran with her easily. At first she kicked and struggled, but he chuckled and told her, "Every time you do that, I will punish you." She took no heed of the warning and kicked wildly with both legs. She was moaning and mumbling into her gag. "Kriya warned you to be still," he told her, and pinched one of her nipples with his fingernails. They were sharp as flint knives, and blood oozed from the wounds they inflicted. She tried to scream, her face contorted with the effort. She writhed and fought and tried to bump him in the face with her head. He took her other nipple and pinched it until his nails almost met in her tender flesh. She froze with agony, and he started up the steep pathway to the top of the koppie. Just below the summit, there was a cleft between two rocks. He laid her in it, then examined her bonds. He had tied them in haste. Now he retied the knots at ankles and wrists. Satisfied that they were tight, he removed the folds of her leather apron from between her jaws. Immediately she screamed with all the force of her lungs. "Yes," he laughed at her. "Ha ha! Do that again! It will bring Bakat to me, even as the squeals of a wounded gazelle bring the leopard." She hissed and spat at him. "My husband is a mighty hunter. He will kill you for this. Your husband is a coward and a braggart. Before the sun sets today, I will make you a widow. Tonight you will share my sleeping mat. Tomorrow you will be married again." He performed a few shuffling dance steps and lifted his apron to show her that he was already tumescent. Kriya had hidden his axe, bow and quiver among the rocks, and he retrieved them. He tested his bowstring, flexing the bow to full draw. Then he removed the leather cover of his quiver and brought out his arrows. They were frail reeds fletched with eagle feathers. Each of the arrowheads was carefully wrapped with a leather covering bound in place with twine. Kriya cut the twine and unwrapped the covers. He worked with great care. The arrowheads were carved from bone, barbed and needle-sharp. They were blackened with poison made from the body juices of the larvae of a particular beetle, boiled until they were thick and sticky as honey. A scratch from one of the poisoned arrows would inflict a death so certain and agonizing that Kriya kept the tips covered in case he accidentally scratched himself. Letty knew these deadly weapons. She had seen her father and grandfather bring down the heaviest game with them. From infancy she had been warned that she must not touch even the quiver that contained them. She stared at them now in dread. Kriya held up one in front of her face. "This is the one I have chosen for Bakat." He stabbed the deadly point at her face, stopping it only a finger's length before her eyes. She recoiled in horror against the rocks and screamed again with all her strength. "Bakat! My husband! Danger! An enemy waits for you!" Kriya stood up with his bow across his muscular shoulder and the unbarred arrows in his quiver ready to hand. "My name is Kriya," he said to Letty. "Tell him my name, so he will know who it is that waits for him." "Kriya!" she screamed. "It is Kriya!" And the echoes flung the name back at her. "Kriya! Kriya!"